sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just a sunny day.
Yeah. Hey.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be taking your calls and questions in just a few minutes. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us your questions at 57500. I wish it was a sunny day, but it's not a sunny day today.
It was raining on the way in this morning.
It looks like it's going to taper off, though, so I might get my tree planting done, hopefully.
I don't have to worry about that, Dave. He said snow Monday.
I know. You're headed to warmer climates. Good for you. You need a vacation. As long as you're back by next week.
I'll be back.
Our listeners are like, you're not going to leave Maria by herself, are you?
It's a short one.
Okay.
We'll be back Thursday night.
All right. We're starting the morning with the plant of the week, and it's the dwarf iris. These kind of mini irises, I adore them. They are just so cute when they pop up, you know, in the spring, and they don't have the thick foliage of their adult partners.
No, these are iris that are native to Iran, Iraq, Russia, and they bloom a month earlier at least than many other iris species.
Yeah, I haven't seen any yet.
No, and so they are one that are used for massing, almost like you would use crocus or some of the small tulips, to where they're better used in groups. Mm-hmm. So they're commonly used in woodland settings, along ponds, or sometimes in more formal settings. I don't know that I'd use them as a border, but sometimes they're mixed into a border with other flowers.
My only complaint about them is they just don't last long enough.
No.
They are such beautiful little flowers, and they're very short-lived.
Yes, and so the name of this dwarf iris is often times called reticulated iris or netted iris because of the flowers. And they have a pretty, what I would say, a standard iris flower, but there are variations on it to where sometimes you can find varieties that are more lavender colored. There are other varieties that are a violet blue, and then some have a mix of the lavender, violet, blue, and then some yellow highlights in them. And so there are several cultivars out there, varieties available that you can mix up.
Right.
So buy three or four varieties together, mix them in the same bed for some added variation.
That gold central stripe, though, on a lot of those just really has those little, they really pop in your flower bed. You really see them. They stand out.
Yes, they do. And so you can actually purchase these. They're usually available as in the bulbs in the fall, mixed in with tulips and the crocus and other, you know, spring blooming bulbs. I've seen hyacinths out lately that were really pretty. And so they need to be planted in the fall. Once in a while, you can find them in a pot in the spring or summer and just plant them already established in a pot. You know, they're not super widely available, but you can find them.
I have to say the ones that I have planted in my courtyard are from a big, huge planter that my husband bought me years ago that was just full of these and those little mini daffodils. And I just, you know, I just transplanted them, put them outside.
Yeah, and they do just fine. And I read up on these, and depending on the fact sheet, one horticulturist recommended planting them on 4-inch centers. And you don't need to line them up by like soldiers, but if you're putting them, massing them in an area, that 4-inch spacing would do it. But then another recommended 1-inch spacing. And I think that the 1-inch spacing, iris have a tendency to stop blooming when they're overcrowded. And so I think on 1-inch spacing, it would be spectacular. But within 2 or 3 years, you'd be lifting them out of the ground and spacing them out. So I almost would prefer 4 inches. For myself, just so I don't have to dig them as often.
Yeah, they're not very fast growing, though, I've noticed.
No, and they will produce little bulblets or baby bulbs or whatever you want to call them around the base, but the babies they produce can take 4 or 5 years before they bloom.
Yeah, and unlike the bigger variety, these are bulbs.
Yes.
And not tubers.
Yes. And so they will be something that you put in, and you put them in some place that's just going to be left alone because they are slow spreading. But they, like you said, they are beautiful when they bloom, and it's nice to go out in the spring if you have a water feature or an area that you like to sit, you know, in the afternoon when it starts to warm up a bit. They're beautiful.
Right. They're really great along the walkway as you're coming into your home, someplace where people are going to see them even when it's cooler. Maybe you're not sitting outside.
Yes. And some of them have a nice fragrance. Some of the iris species almost to me smell like grape Kool-Aid.
Okay.
The scent.
I can't say that I've ever really smelled them, but okay.
Well, if you could smell how grape Kool-Aid
I can imagine
tastes,
what grape Kool-Aid
but
tastes
they have
and
a
smells
pleasant
like.
Fragrance. And then the other thing with the netted iris or these dwarf iris is that they're actually shade tolerant. And so you can put them, they still need 5 or 6 hours of sunlight a day, but they do just fine on an east exposure or under shade trees as long as it's not deep, dank shade.
Mm-hmm. Anything, any other special conditions that they require?
No, they like to dry out a little bit in the summer. They still will need supplemental water. And so they can be a part of a water-wise yard in shaded areas to give you some spring blooms. Other things to be a little cautious about it, like all iris, they are poisonous. And so you don't want to
plant them where the little toddlers are going to be.
Yes, you're
going to
pull them
right
up and things. They taste really bad, I'm assuming. You don't hear a lot of people trying to eat iris, but that would also make them deer resistant.
But they're worth noting. They're worth planting in a very showy place where people walk up to your
yes,
house.
Yes, they're very worth
a lot
it.
Of time.
I wouldn't plant my whole yard up in it because you'd have a good spring show and then nothing.
Right.
But areas with these in there are very worth doing.
Okay, anything else you'd like to mention about them?
Just look for them in the fall.
All right. And again, we're talking about the dwarf iris or the iris reticulata. And you can find out more about these on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. We're going to take a break, come back with your questions and calls. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. Phone lines are open right now. It's a good time to call, or you can text us at 57500. Do you think the rain is discouraging people from wanting to go out in their yards?
It always does a little. I mean, on a rainy Saturday, if my kids don't have sports, it is a day to sleep in, read a book.
Oh, that's the problem.
Yes.
They're sleeping in. Anyone who follows me on Facebook knows that I'm planting some pretty large trees. We're doing a more water-wise park strip, part of a re-landscape of the north side of our house. And yesterday I started to dig down, and I've learned a few things in the last day that I'm going to share with you. Dig down to put in these very large trees. So I measured the root ball exactly where you told me it needs to be buried. And if anybody didn't hear your advice about tree planting, they can go back to the Facebook page, and there's a really nice article that's written on it as well. You can hear all about that. So I had to dig 17 inches down, 27 inches diameter to make this root ball fit in this hole. So I'm digging along. It's pretty easy because it's kind of moist right now until I get down to that 17-inch mark, and I find 4 inches of road base left behind by the crew. Probably some 30 years ago when they put in the subdivision, right? And I used a lot of naughty words trying to pick through that stuff.
They compact it.
Oh, and it was like there's nothing that's going to grow through that road base. No wonder nothing along that park strip ever grew very well.
Yeah, and road base can be tough, but when you put trees in parking lots and similar situations, in these little islands, that's one of the reasons trees really struggle. And many times I see in homeowner situations because of our sprinkling systems and we fertilize the lawns and different things, the trees do okay in those situations, especially if you have a good 17 inches of topsoil. but it is so miserable to plant in, especially if you don't have a commercial tree auger that's augering your holes out and things. And it does get very difficult.
Yeah. My question for you is, though, so if I've hit that at 17 inches down, and that's pretty much where that root ball is going to sit, and you said don't dig it any deeper, but yet I've found road base, then what is the best advice?
Well, the tree roots will grow not maybe through the road base, but they will go sideways. And if they can get under the sidewalk into regular soil, then they would focus on rooting there. And because this is a waterwise situation, you have to have irrigation. But as those trees get bigger, you are probably going to, because they're not going to be growing under the road mm-hmm. for water, they're going the other way. You're probably going to eventually need some gridded or inline drip pressure compensating so that it waters evenly, so that you can get it out there to keep the trees watered.
Okay, so I don't need to dig any deeper than that.
Stick
with that depth. But what about, should I be digging wider knowing that there's still that road base in that
first few inches? More so that you can get the tree in the hole positioned how you want. You're going to have room to cut the wire basket off from the tree, have room to stake it, and, you know, do everything you need to do. And so if you've got a good 5 or 6 inches at least on any side of the tree, then that's just going to be easier to work with the tree and get it how you need to and get everything that needs to come off of the root ball, you know, the burlap, the wire basket, the twine.
Mm-hmm. But I cannot worry so much about that road base. The roots will maybe grow above that.
Well, roots will come out sideways from the root ball. They don't go down initially because when those trees are handled, you know, they're dropped on the ground. And so trees also don't root out like pictures show where you have an equal canopy under the soil like you do on top. The roots stay in the top 18 inches to 2 feet of soil. And so because the roots actually go more sideways, then digging that hole a little wider will loosen the soil a bit and give opportunity for those roots to punch through. But over a period of 4 or 5 years, in search of nutrients, those roots will go under the sidewalk to where you have other, when I say bare ground, not covered up by road, and those will be the areas that you focus on fertilizing and watering.
Mm-hmm. So your best advice for folks actually digging the hole when they do, I know that I'm not alone in this. I know that a lot of subdivisions are just like this. When they have to dig through something like that, your best advice is?
To hire a professional. Well, there's some things you can do. You know, I think one of the best things that do-it-yourselfers can do is to rent power equipment from Home Depot, Sun Rentals, wherever.
I might do that today. And one hole was bad enough.
There is a piece of equipment that a company, and there's several companies now, but the original company was called Dingo. And it was a little mini skid steer or, you know, just almost like a bobcat. It is a stand behind and it's only 2.5 feet wide. And you can get them either with a scoop bucket or a bucket that you would trench with, just almost like a little mini excavator. But if you can learn to use one of these, you can actually dig your holes with a Dingo. And the things that are nice about the Dingos and the similar equipment is you can fit them through gates. You know, because a bobcat, you could never do that, but these mm-hmm. Dingos will go right through. And so they're commonly used for building small ponds and water features, digging tree holes and things of that nature. But even then, I will get a good drill, or I'll get one from Harbor Freight with a warranty and get what's called a bulb auger. And the bulb auger is about 2 to 2.5 inches wide. And you've got to be careful with them because if you get them stuck, they will whip around a little bit. And so you have to hold them securely. But the bulb auger, I will just run through 6 inches, you know, 4 or 6 inches and work my way through the soil with it. And it loosens the soil and it makes it easier to pick and dig out because you're using electric power. Mm-hmm. And so I don't actually use my bulb augers to plant bulbs. I use them to dig holes.
So it's bulb.
B-U-L-B.
Yep. Oh, okay. Not bowl. Bulb.
No. Yeah. Bulb auger.
That's,
I was born in a barn, so sometimes I slur my speech. I'm not drunk. I'm just born in a barn.
No, it's just sometimes your brain fills into, like my brain's.
No. And so you can pick these up off Amazon. Hardware stores and garden centers often have them. They're a little more common in the fall, but they're $15 on Amazon. And as long as your soil's not rocky, they can be your best friend. The other thing, and it may not help with the road base, but because I have really clay soil and it's rocky, mm-hmm. and it has rocks that are up to 6 inches wide, and those you just have to work around. But what I will do, you know, I was out a couple of years ago planting some trees, and the soil was a little bit dry, and I'm just going for everything I'm worth. You know, you talk about using naughty words, digging that hole, and my wife comes out and says, "What you doing?" It's like digging holes. And I was all grumpy. And she's like, "Why don't you put water in them and let it soak in and dig them tomorrow?" And so it works. I dug the holes about 6 inches deep, filled them with water, went out the next day, and it was just a different world.
Right.
The rocks came out easily, and I got them dug to the depth they needed to be. So that's some of my suggestions.
Right. So speaking of water, it's raining right now. Is it going to be too wet for me to actually dig these big holes?
If you have clay
soil
and the soil's really sticking to the shovel, it's too wet and it's mucky. You can ruin your soil structure. But if the soil is moist and for the most part, the dirt isn't sticking to the shovel, it's fine.
Okay. As long as it's not sticking to the shovel, you're good to go.
Yes.
Okay. The other thing I learned is that you should shop around for T-posts, especially if you're putting in like 5 trees, because
yes,
the price varies very distinctly from a farm store to Home Depot by $2 or $3. And if you're buying 10, it's a big difference, right?
It is.
You know, if you're just buying a couple and you're going to go to the most convenient place, right? You're not going to drive around town, but
no,
it's worth doing a little search around on that. I did that. It's like $2 or $3 difference. So
yes,
things you learn when you're planting trees.
Yeah. I mean, and it starts to add up when you're re-landscaping, and $30 and $40 here, if you can get that savings over and over, it's really convenient.
All right. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you. We're taking your calls, and the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. We have been talking about tree planting, and before we took the break, we were talking about T-posts that you pretty much have to put on the sides of those new trees, especially when they're larger trees when you plant them. And Tom, they have to stay in the ground for a year.
They do. So on especially bald and burlap trees, because the wire basket comes off once the tree is in the hole, you cut it away. A lot of the support the tree would have from that wire basket and the twine wrapped around the trunk is gone. And so if you get a strong windstorm and the trees are not secured, they can blow over in the wind. And so you stake the trees from two sides for 1 year to allow those roots to grow into the soil so that it can defend against blowing over in the wind as it gets older.
So those T-posts are put in at the same time, at the same depth that you are planting the tree.
You actually can dig off to the side. I would dig the holes a good 6 inches deeper than the tree hole, just to get the posts in so they're more secure.
I'm going to have to dig deeper. Are you kidding, Tom?
This is where the bulb...
This took me 2.5 hours to just dig
this. This is where the bulb auger comes in handy, because you can just use the bulb auger.
Oh, okay. All right.
So...
bulb auger to get through to the side of those. Okay.
Yes.
I'm going to go buy one today. There's just
they're a good tool. And they need... If Bob has a good drill... Mm-hmm. That's a good hammer drill, that's a Milwaukee or a Makita, a good company, it won't burn the bearings out. But if you're using like a Walmart Black & Decker,
you're in trouble.
You'll burn your bearings out. So you do need a good drill to do it, but they are
good
wonderful.
Advice.
So the posts have to go in, and you put them in either straight or on a slight angle away from the tree.
Yeah, why a slight angle?
That just adds some strength as the tree goes back and forth. If it's on an angle, the tree, if it pulls the post a little bit, it's going to straighten out more than just get pulled towards the tree. And so we always put them on a slight angle. And you found it used to be that the ponderosa treated posts that you would see on trees were less expensive. But right now, metal T-posts are way less expensive than the ponderosa treated posts.
They're green or gray, and they look nice. They don't look, you know.
Yeah, and so you were finding that a lot of times our independent farm stores they're far less expensive.
$2 to $3 less.
Places
per
like
post.
Steve Regan, IFA, than the box stores.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so they stay in a year. But
they
then
do.
How do you get them out if they're digged
so
that deeply?
If, you know, you learn why the original cursing people were farmers because they would dig and things, but digging T-posts out with a shovel is a new level of punishment.
Plus, doesn't it hurt the roots of the tree?
It can, because you have to dig a wide hole. And even when you get most of the way down, those posts can stick in the ground. And so there's a couple of different things you can do to get them out of the ground. If you have a jack, like you would use for a pickup truck, that is a tall jack that ratchets up, you can put those and wire that to a T-post and just pull it out that way. Mm-hmm. Wiring it can be a little bit tricky, but it's very doable. But you can also either rent or purchase what's called a T-post puller. And it looks like these truck jacks, except for it is, instead of being ratcheted, it's a lever. And the lever, you connect, and the lever's long enough that you just push the lever down and those T-posts come out, and it's just slick. It takes under 2 minutes to pull one out of the ground.
Oh, that's
and so if
go.
You have 10 or 15 or 20 T-posts, for the $80 or $90 these things cost, if you can't find one to rent to me, it is worth every penny. And then you just put it in your garage, and it's one of those tools you may not use again for 5 years. But once you have try to dig T-posts out without a jack or a T-post puller, it's a nightmare. And they just come right up out of the ground with these T-post pullers.
Right. And then the other thing is that you have to tie the post to the tree. So describe kind of the options you can use. We've talked about this, and you said putting a rag up against the tree. And
if you are using
give
rope.
Give us the options.
So if you have rope or baling twine, you can use that to secure the tree, but you never, the first thing is you don't ever tie knots around the tree trunk because it may girdle the trunk. In a year, it probably won't, but it can. And as that tree moves, if you have a loop that's knotted on the trunk, it's more likely to score the bark, which you don't want. And so you always loop the rope around the trunk and tie to the T-post. But if you're using rope or twine especially, you need to get an old cotton cloth and wrap it around the trunk and then put the rope or twine around the cotton cloth to the T-post. Now, there are kits available that use straps instead of rope, and the straps are usually an inch to an inch and a half wide, and they have grommets in them that then you can wrap those grommets or wrap the strap around the tree and then use the grommets to tie off to the posts so that you have a wider surface area and they're less likely to do damage to the trunk.
And they do look nice too, by the way.
They look a lot more professional. We're going from kind of not really sloppy looking, but definitely homemade. I used what I had to a more professional look. And I actually like the tree staking kits that you can get with these straps in them because there is less potential for them to damage the tree.
Okay. Russ is on the, well, before we get to Russ, one person was saying about the posts, you can use post pounders. It's much easier to get them in as well.
Yes. And if you have not been doing upper body strength training, your muscles will be jello the next day.
Mine are kind of sore already. Okay, Russ is on the line in Murray. Good morning, Russ. What was your question this morning?
Good morning. Yeah, I have a couple questions. Just one, my lawn seems really lumpy. So my first question is, why do we have lumpy lawns? And then second question is, how do we get rid of them, the lumps?
Well, there are all sorts of reasons why we get lumpy lawns. And so let me ask some questions. Did you plant your lawn yourself?
No, it's an older lawn.
Okay. It's an older lawn, so that helps. And then have you ever had your soil tested?
No, have not.
Does it seem to be pretty clayey in texture to where if you took a ball of moist soil and rubbed it between your hands, could you make a ribbon several inches long?
No, I've dug in it, and it doesn't. It's pretty sandy. I mean, it's not
fantastic.
Clay-y.
Okay. So I suspect I was wanting to eliminate the lawn from being overwatered and forming clumps like that because of earthworms, because of compacted or clay soil. And I suspect the lawn is just old and it has separated out a little bit, and you may have rye or fescue forming little mounds or clumps that are growing faster than the rest of the lawn. So here's what I would do.
Okay.
Have you looked at your thatch also to see how much thatch you have underneath the grass?
Yeah, when I've dug it up, it's pretty thick. I mean, I've taken out because I've planted trees and a couple things.
So there's more than a half of an inch of thatch.
Yes.
Okay, so here's what I do. I would get a lawn dethatcher, and you can get a blade for $25-$30 and put it on your mower. You might be able to rent one, or you can get on Amazon and get an electric one that you pull backwards. And I would dethatch the lawn, and if you get a mowing type, set it a little lower so that you can knock those clumps down. The other thing I would start doing is aerating and see if you can loosen that up and get rid of some of the thatch, because it does sound like there might be some compaction in there or other things. Now, when you water, do you allow the water to the lawn to dry out between irrigations?
Yeah, I do. Because the most I ever water is like every other day, and sometimes it's only twice a week.
Okay, good. Good. So allow the lawn to dry out a little bit, but see if you can even it out with the thatching and just maybe not really scalping it, but those clumps, if you have a blade on there, you'll really kind of level them out a little bit with a dethatching blade.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right, Russ, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, is wondering if it's time to put pre-emergent down, and will that hurt their 2-year-old bushes that they planted, like Rose of Sharon and Lilacs?
No, it won't hurt anything. Do not put the pre-emergent down and cover it with mulch, because that will. And so the pre-emergent always goes on top of the mulch, but it'll be fine just because the roots are underground and the pre-emergent stays on the soil surface.
Next listener says they're 28, new to gardening. Are there some community classes that they can take to start learning the basics?
There are, depending on where you live. Central Utah Water has several online classes that are free that you can register for on their website. Weber Basin Water offers several classes. It looks like Conservation Garden Park this year was mainly just doing water conservation oriented classes instead of general vegetable gardening. It could be they already taught them, but I would check the Water Conservancy District. So Weber Basin, Conservation Garden Park, Central Utah would be the three. And then some of the local extension offices are also offering gardening classes.
Okay. We are going to take a break, come back with your calls and questions. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. Next listener, Ton, wants you to share your thoughts on hydroponics. And then I'll share my thoughts. You don't do a lot of hydroponics.
No, it's for a homeowner, it's a hobby. You're not going to break even. And, you know, on a larger scale, even where you see hydroponics be more common are places like Alaska, Northern Canada, to where it becomes more expensive to ship fresh food in than it is to just grow it in a greenhouse in those cold climates. And so it's fine. There's science behind it, works, but it's just something that, especially on a small scale, you'll get enough for a salad or something, but it's
exactly
not
what I've found.
But it's not anything that I wouldn't count on supporting my family with it.
And you don't want to do that through the summer when you can grow it so easily in the ground, and the hydroponics take more time, but it's a really clean way if you're like allergic to some of the things that are found in soil. We've had, you know, people call us about stuff like that. There's a reason to do it, but it takes a lot more time.
Yes. And on a
very small
larger scale, let's say you built a greenhouse trying to do hydroponics, you have to monitor the water because there's small amounts of fertilizer in the water to keep the plants going, and you have to monitor it if it's the levels are getting too low or
you can't
high.
Just set it and let it go.
You're monitoring sometimes the pH of the water, the salinity, just all sorts of things, and it becomes almost like monitoring a hot tub.
It's kind of a fun winter hobby.
It is, but if there are kits you can buy, and Maria has a desktop kit.
I have a couple.
Looks like it came off the Star Trek Enterprise.
I need something in the winter.
Starship Enterprise.
Yeah. You know, it works.
Yes.
Yep.
And so they're fun.
All right. Gary is on the line in West Point. Good morning, Gary.
Good morning.
What was your question this morning?
I have a 100-foot lilac hedge, common lilacs. And the last few years, there's been some of them started to fade out. And I couldn't figure out, I couldn't see any sign of borers. But I'm getting some black on the bark. And when I look online at lilac diseases, I can't find anything that matches what I have. And I'm just wondering what it might be, what kind of disease and what it could do to maybe take care of that.
How long have the lilacs been in the ground?
Probably 20 years.
Okay. And are they just kind of dying a stem at a time?
Yeah, there's just some dieback, not the whole plant, and then sometimes they come back. But yeah, the leaves are kind of fading smaller.
I suspect that they get some various root rot diseases in them. When you get them between about 20 and 30 years old, it becomes more common, and there's nothing you can do about it once it's in the lilac, unfortunately.
Okay.
And so if you start to have them fade, and I know it kind of ruins the look of the hedge, what you may need to do is yank the dead ones out and go in with a different shrub. And so maybe you could turn this into a mixed hedge of similarly sized bushes to where you could go back in with some Rose of Sharon here and there. And so you had spring lilac, summer Rose of Sharon. You might be able to get some Golden Privet or some Cheyenne Privet to go in there. But the lilacs just do that after 25 or 30 years sometimes, and there's no cure for it.
Okay, that's what I was wondering, if it was just age-related, so.
Yeah, I grew up in West Point, and when I was there, it was still mostly farms. And to see those old houses through there, it just brings back a lot of fond memories. I apologize that your hedge is struggling. The only other thing you could try doing is maybe going in with some fertilizer now. And just get lawn fertilizer and walk on either side of them and just spread it out just like you would for your lawn and see if that stimulates some new growth. But that's about the only other thing.
All right, Gary, thank you so much for your call this morning. We are about to break for the top of the hour news. We'll come back with your calls and questions. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. If you're just tuning in and you missed the plant of the week this morning at the top of the 8 o'clock hour was the dwarf iris. And you can find out more about that on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about controlling weeds using lawn pre-emergent, something people are asking a lot of questions about this morning. So stay with us. We'll be right back.